next, Bread and Roses welcomes local poet Sage Cohen to discuss radical divorce as a spiritual practice.
Tune in to Plugged In every first and third Fridays from 10 p.m. to midnight with host DJ Tronic. Tronic does a live mix in the studio featuring the latest in house, techno, tech house, breaks, dubstep, and more. Tronic also has guest DJs in the studio and often talks about upcoming parties, club nights, and more. That's Plugged In every first and third Fridays at 10 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, our guest will be Penny Allen. She'll be discussing her film work and her knowledge of Europe, North Africa, and the situation in that region. Don't miss the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with Penny Allen from 8 to 9 this Tuesday morning.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting folk artist Christine Lavin and Seattle's Uncle Bonsai in the Just One Angel Tour, Friday, December 20th. Doors at 7, show at 8, and tickets information for Christine Lavin and Uncle Bonsai available at aladdin-theater.com.
Information about this homepage under
Marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs, on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, making it the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. This airspace is shared among a collective, and we are always open to new women-identified radio activists. We will provide training and support for you to bring your personal vision to your community. If interested in joining our collective, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also visit us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, and on Facebook under KBOO Bread and Roses. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kronz, and our engineer is Chris. Our guest tonight in the studio is local poet Sage Cohen. She has been writing poems for more than 30 years and aims to, quote, take poetry from its academic pedestal and put it back into the hands of the people, end quote. Sage Cohen is the author of the 2007 poetry collection, Like the Heart, the World, and the upcoming collection, How to Leave Your Husband. Sage has authored two writing guides, Writing the Life Poetic, an invitation to read and write poetry, and The Productive Writer. She shares her knowledge and experience with our community through providing e-courses, workshops, and lectures in an effort to inspire. Tonight, Sage Cohen will read poems from her new collection, How to Leave Your Husband. She'll also share some writing tips for productivity and overcoming obstacles. and she'll introduce her newest project, Radical Divorce, a blog and online course to help parents move through divorce with intention and integrity and transform their lives and families. Sage says, quote, "I considered my divorce and now co-parenting my spiritual practice," end quote. Welcome, Sage Cohen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Sage, you have a beautiful way with words, both written and spoken. I met you after you did a panel at Wordstock this year, and during that panel, you disarmed me more than once with the way you spoke from the heart. Mm. It was really moving. And you've written in various forms, essays and articles, nonfiction, but poetry seems to be your special home.
Yes.
Can you talk about what is it about poetry that inspires you?
I think of poetry as my first language, and it was something I was doing for many years before I even understood that's what I was doing. I told a story recently, and people don't believe me when I say this, that I had been writing poems for about 10 years before I became self-conscious that I was writing poems. And it just kind of occurred to me one day. I had quit a job so that I could take a temp job so that I would have more space to write, more time and emotional and practical space to write. And when I made that choice, that was when I kind of came into knowing, wow, I write poems every day. I wonder if that means I'm a poet. And so it was almost like becoming conscious of breathing and saying, I wonder if I'm a breather. And so there's a way that for me, poetry has never had any ambition to it, or no ambition beyond solving things for myself, no outer world ambition. And it's been complicated bringing it into the world because that was never sort of what it was about for me. So it's been this kind of slow process. I have all these sort of layers and stages of remembering, oh, yeah, I am perceived as in this way for this love I have and this practice that I have that's very personal and private. Mm.
So now that once you recognize yourself as a poet, now can you put into words what it is about that medium that in particular pulls at you?
I think it is the desire to sort of solve experience, to make sense of not just my experience, human experience, emotion, to try to kind of put a frame around it and find a way to look at it and feel it and move through it that feels accurate. So it's like retelling myself the story of my life, of the life of the people I encounter, and the human life.
Neat. And that's, yeah. I love so much about reading poetry. You really, through someone's personal experience, somehow something universal comes from it. Poets seem to somehow be able to really nail what it means to be human. They can really describe these truths about the human condition.
Yeah, I think the more, the paradox is that the more absolutely specific we are and the more accurate we are about our particular experience, then kind of the more access other people have to come in and sort of find their own place in it. I don't know how that works, but it seems to be true.
You're right. You have to be so precise when you write poems. You have to choose the perfect word and really kind of take what's nebulous and nail it down. You know, it's really, I love it.
I love how it's, I love how you can write poems for 30 years and still feel like a beginner with every poem, and that it's a lifelong practice that never gets solved.
Yeah. in your writing guide that deals with poetry, Writing mm-hmm. the Life Poetic, on the back cover, you state an intention that your aim was to take poetry from its academic pedestal, as I mentioned, and put it back in the hands of the people. How do you approach that?
I'm taking off my earrings so they don't bang into things here. What I have experienced with in my teaching and in my talking to people about poetry is that it seems like the great majority of people feel like poetry is not for them. It's not something they could understand. It's not something they were allowed to do. Somebody at some point in their life told them they weren't good at it or they didn't understand it. And at one point I was talking to a group of people and I asked them, how many of you used to write poems but then got happy and went on to do other things? And like most, you know, this ripple of laughter went through the room, and most people could identify with that. You know, we have very particular ideas about what poetry's for and
the tortured artist.
Yeah. So my passion is to show people that poetry is for them too. And if they want it, not everybody wants to be invited into that world. But to invite people to have fun with language and to see that poetry is just about making choices with language and making more choices and more choices. And it's this incredible kind of playground of sound and imagery and line. And there's so much to know about it, but that's what's fun about it. And kind of inviting people to discover who they are on the page and to feel like the page is a place where they are invited to be. And I think that that's the biggest holdup for people with poetry, is they just don't feel invited into the party, to the club.
I think you're very right. It's somehow, you know, and this is a writer town. And even mm-hmm. in Portland, poetry is perceived as something you better know what you're doing if you're going to call yourself a poet. There are rules and there are, you know, you just feel like there's this whole canon you have to know and you have to, it's somehow lofty and separate from the creative scrabble of writing. And I found your book, Writing the Life Poetic, very freeing. Mm. You just really knock down the barriers one by one. And really, again, as you mentioned, just invite people to do it and you empower them that it's theirs as well. And what's very impressive to me, I just have to say, you went to Brown, you went to NYU, both Ivy League schools, and you studied poetry, correct?
At NYU, I studied poetry.
You focused there.
Yeah.
I mean, Ivy League schools, and even you learned it in that, quote, classical way, and you could have stayed there and rested on your laurels and been one of those out-of-reach poets, but the fact, I love it when people, you know, step aside from their privilege and really try to empower and enable others, so kudos to you.
Oh, thank you.
For that.
I think that the ultimate gift and opportunity of poetry is to connect, so I want as many people who are interested in that vehicle to feel like that is a vehicle for them. Because it has been really a life-saving vehicle for me. And to have people turned away at the doors, mm-hmm. Literally or figuratively, because they don't feel like they belong in that realm, is something that I'm very interested in moving away from.
You know, I dabbled in poetry. I write fiction usually, and I was done with something that ended up going nowhere, and I just wanted to keep writing, and I just thought, you know, poetry was shorter form, and it helped practice, you know, with, you know, really honing ideas, mm-hmm. and I all the while, though, I was telling myself, you don't belong here. This is not for anyone else to see. You're not a poet, because I felt that I must not be following certain rules, or I didn't know how to organize my lines, but
well, that,
again,
I think,
you break that down.
My goal in the book, Writing the Life Poetic, was there's 80 short chapters, and each chapter is about showing people how possible things are. Mm-hmm. Sharing a Ted Kooser poem where he's standing in a pharmacy looking at a spiral notebook, and that's what the poem's about. It's this profound, beautiful poem about aging and life and the human condition, but what's taking place in the poem is a man standing in a pharmacy holding this notebook and kind of showing people you don't need to be whatever your imagined version of extraordinary is. You know, your regular life is exactly what you need for poetry to show up at the page. Your regular life, you don't need to be mentally ill. You don't need to, you know, have wildly exciting anything. You just need to be excited about language and willing to play with it. And so the goal of the chapters was to show something that felt inviting to people and then give exercises that felt inviting to people and just get people doing it and seeing, oh, yeah, I can write a metaphor. Oh, yeah, I see what's interesting about those line breaks. I think it could be fun to experiment myself and just kind of get in there doing it. And when you're having fun doing it, then you don't even notice that you've entered the mosh pit. You're not standing on the edge wondering if you should jump.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. Our guest is local poet Sage Cohen. We've just been talking about her writing guide, Writing the Life Poetic, an invitation to read and write poetry. And Sage, why don't you read something for us tonight?
Okay. This poem is called Sculpting Light. Excuse me. And it starts with an epigraph, a few lines from a Hafiz poem. And those lines are, "The vintage man no longer hurts himself or anyone and keeps on sculpting light." Sculpting light. Nothing that enters me from you can be used. The small white pill I take each morning, my insistent moon. I refuse, I refuse, I refuse. It chants as the spider swings its dark star over my bed. When I look out from within the sculpture of loneliness, I find you have lost your sword, pain your shield, as if one hurt could protect you from another. But I am everywhere, and sky, and you, and light, and we are bright as any absence pouring through the empty spaces.
I'm so sorry, I'm coughing. Thank you, Sage.
My pleasure.
Sage and I both have the Portland plague. We might be coughing this evening. Sage, I understand that poem is from your upcoming collection, How to Leave Your Husband.
Yes.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I'll try to remain quiet.
Sure. It's about two years ago, I began a divorce process. 3 years ago, my marriage ended. And I wrote myself through the transition. And sort of traveled these poems of this collection through my healing process, through my reckoning process, my exploration of how did I get here and what could I have done better and who was I when I entered this marriage and who am I now and where am I going? So this is kind of my meditation on becoming a seasoned woman through the choices I've made, the mistakes I've made, and the relationships that I have had as I've gone.
I had the really nice opportunity to read this collection before it's been released, and it was just full of wisdom, it seemed. It was really brave of you to share such intimate, I'm assuming. We should never assume that the poems are truthful, autobiographical. as you point out in your writing guide about poetry, but yeah. It just seemed like you were really putting it out there for people, and you really nailed the mood at the end of a breakup, and all the setbacks and the false starts and the outrages and betrayals and the emotional shutdown. It's all in there. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't bitter. You know, it was empowering, and it seemed to be brimming with self-discovery as well. You know, as you worked through these feelings, you were learning not just what happened to the writer, but what the writer discovered about herself. And how did you, I always ask writers, you know, how did you get to a place where you could be so brave on the page, to use a term from Forest Avenue Press?
I feel like that's the contract the writer makes, is a willingness to go into the truth and not knowing what the truth is going to be, but to follow the poem, follow the language, follow the images where they bring us, and report back from that place as accurately and honestly as we can. I don't really understand it. I feel like poetry has taught me how to be a person. It has taught me courage. It has taught me the kind of integrity and intention that I live with now. It has given me this space to craft my thinking and to align. This is what happened, and this is where I'm going with it. And it has really helped me make my life experience meaningful for myself. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this with writer friends that I think if I had understood the kind of truths that I was going to be required to tell, I don't know that I would have set out on this journey, because it's one thing to tell them to your journal or your computer. It's another to go out into the world with them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's the most important gift we can give each other, is to be willing to have the courage to say what is true for ourselves, because then it makes room for everyone else to say, well, maybe what's true for me isn't so bad, isn't so scary, isn't so different from everybody else. I feel like we all grow up thinking that we're these little secretly terrible bubbles, and no one else would be able to relate to these things that we're feeling or these things that we've experienced. And I think the more literature there is where people are really sort of leaning deep into what's true, the more space there is for all of us to kind of breathe more deeply and let ourselves be and welcome ourselves.
Have you ever written a poem in this series that you decided not to share with the world?
The only ones that didn't make it into the collection were because I didn't think they were good poems. I mean, there wasn't any poem in here. There wasn't a poem where I thought, I'm backing down from this because I can't have this visible. There is one poem in the collection that I shared with my co-parent right when I wrote it, and he requested that I wait a few years before I publish it, and I did. I did wait a few years. And I think there is this sort of tempering with time also, that in the time it takes to write a poetry collection, relationship dynamics, things kind of settle down such that by the time the collection is ready to go into the world, it's been lived with long enough that it's not quite so fresh and raw.
At the end of the collection, there's a poem near the end, Dear Divorce, and you talk about how, you know, you call divorce the branding iron of divorce, that there's so much judgment that's coming down on you. And so, and you go, as you're going through the process, there it seems that divorce is a thing that everyone must pass through. Sounds like a gauntlet, you know, and you just get through it. And but in this poem, you make it very clear. You say, "But hear this, divorce. I made love a boat, and we all piled in. When you come for me, I'll still be rowing." You made divorce. You did it your own way, and yeah. I have a lot of admiration for that. And I think our listeners would be really interested to know what you've done with that. Mm. Your new work, your new platform, Radical Divorce. Do you mind telling folks how this collection segued into that effort to help others going through the same thing?
Sure. So I came to understand, in the past couple of years, I've come to understand the possibilities of writing as transportation through transformation. And I feel like I finally kind of understood that's why I write. Because I want to evolve. I want to grow. I want to learn. And writing is the place where that all happens for me, where I start with what happened, and then I go to the discovery of what's in it for me. And when I was early in my divorce process, there was a day when I kind of understood that I made a choice, that my divorce process, that I was going to make the pain worth it. That if I was going to be in this much pain, I was going to use it. I was going to eat it. You know, I was going to digest it and make it meaningful to my life. And I started looking at my relationship with my co-parent and my relationship with myself and my relationship with our divorce process as my spiritual, as a spiritual path. And so everything that came up for me, I was just grateful for. Like, wow, look at that part of me that needs attention. Cool. Now I can look at it and lean into it and give it the attention it needs to heal. So I really tried to orient myself to the opportunity. And when things came up that were difficult between my co-parent, things are so smooth and delightful between us now, but they were very difficult for me at a time. And when things came up, I just would be grateful for the opportunity that I got to see these parts of myself that were so challenged or limited or confused, whatever it was. And at the time, so I got involved with a group of women. We created a project called Hopeful Divorce. This was kind of the precursor to Radical Divorce. And we created this product where for 6 months every day, an email, people would sign up and would get an email every day for 6 months. Our audience was mothers going through divorce. And Jennifer New and I, the other writer, shared our stories in little snippets of things we had struggled with, things we had discovered, things we were striving for. And that experience led to, that wrapped up, and I started to feel in my own community here in Portland like the Florence Nightingale of divorce and women. I had women coming to me frequently. Suddenly, everyone was going through a divorce or thinking about going through a divorce and wanting to talk to me about the choices I made and the choices they were thinking about making. Excuse me. And I thought, you know, I want to make a real offering. I have dedicated years of my life to this healing process. And I have done it in writing because that's how I do it. And now I have this wealth of material that is growing by the day. I want to share it with people. And I want to be giving gifts of my learning to the world. And so I've been working on, it's not live yet, it's going to be live any day, this blog called Radical Divorce. And I feel, I named it Radical Divorce because I feel like my position on divorce is somewhat unusual. that it can be an incredible opportunity to lean into those places that are most challenged and heal them and come out the other side happier and more whole and in better shape, being better off for the entire experience and grateful for the person we married and the person we divorced and you know, in good shape with ourselves and in a harmonious dynamic with them and reinventing what is our family now that we're in two separate homes and we're co-parenting and how does that look? But to invite people to stay focused on, even when they're in the pit of the, this is happening to me, that we have choices about the stories that we tell, the attitudes that we bring, the things that we say that steer the boat. That, you know, the winds are the winds, but what we do with the sails and what we make of those forces, we have a lot of choices about. And it's so difficult to feel those choices when we are in that pit of transformation.
We're speaking with local poet Sage Cohen about her new online blog and course that she will launch any day now, Radical Divorce. And you mentioned that divorce and then co-parenting became your spiritual practice. So, which really is radical indeed. And it really excited me when I first learned about your endeavor. So it seems that, you know, you just try to be your highest self in all these conversations and interactions that you had with your former husband and as you co-parented. What did you tell yourself? How did you stay in that place where you could, you know, speak, say what you needed to say, but in a way that didn't make it worse? And how? I mean, the passions are so high and there's so much baggage. How did you stay there?
I'm picturing my friends listening to us now and
laughing.
Them laughing about, you know, what they saw and heard. This is interesting. So a couple choices I made. Something happened to me before I got divorced. I don't know if I had ever truly experienced anger. And so I was really quite unprepared for the rage that came up and stayed up. It just kind of burned through my entire life for probably 5 months solid. And I had a very wise friend advise me. My friend Constance said, stop trying to feel better. Feel as bad as you can feel and let it burn. And I let myself have it. And I understood that it was a kind of medicine, that it wasn't, it's, you know, the divorce and what happened with my co-parent, my husband, was connected to, I describe it as, you know, the magician pulling the scarves, you know, out of the mouth. And, you know, I thought I had a couple scarves to pull, but I had a lifetime of scarves knotted. And this was my opportunity to meet all of this stuff. That was all, they were all the choices that had led to some of what went on in my marriage. But it was a rage that was not entirely, not even mostly about my marriage. But it just took me out. And while I was going through that, my choice was to just have as little, I wasn't in much, I was only in the communication that I needed to be in around practical things with my, I just kept my mouth shut because I knew that I was in a process that was mine that didn't need to go anywhere but beyond my walls and my experience. And I had a project that I took on during that time. My friend Tom, when he moved to Portland, did an alphabet project. And every day he wrote a little story. He started with A. He'd go find something with an A, and he'd write a little story about something about Portland. It's kind of how he initiated himself into Portland. I created a rage alphabet series. And every day I wrote a story or an essay with a letter of the alphabet. And I let... It was so, the writing that came through was so raw and fierce and true, and it didn't wrap up with a happy little ending of insight, which so much of my writing, as you've read, I tend to steer things toward the happy ending and the revelation and the right. insight. This stuff was just on the ground, and it stayed on the ground. So I let myself have it, and I wrote myself through it. And I was very careful about how I interacted with my co-parent during that time, because I knew, and it was flawed. I mean, much of the grace between us in that period was his. He held the space for us. He was positive. He was friendly. He stayed focused on the best in me. So he really got us through that mm-hmm. chapter. Because, you know, as much as I worked to manage it, I'm sure, excuse me, things leaked through. And I think more and more as time went on, I got faster and faster. I mean, things would happen and they would have this huge reaction. But I was writing for myself, okay, so I now know that when this happens, I have this kind of reaction. How am I going to work with that? Okay, these are the questions I need to ask myself when I get completely thrown off. This is how I can call myself back. This is who I want to be. So it was just a process of, you know, just kind of like revising a poem, going back and back to, okay, how did I handle that? Oh, not so great. And when I really was able to get to the point, and this was not what was so hard for me, I love to feel grateful. I love to stay focused on the positive. I had a year when I could not get there. I was not grateful. I was not positive. I was just kind of in despair. And yeah.
I had a sneak peek at this radical divorce site that will be going live very soon. And you offer some of these writings mm-hmm. to the readers. One of them, if memory serves, one of the poems you shared is How to Pray. Do you mind? It seems to kind of
sure.
discuss that phase we just talked about. Do you mind reading that to us?
Sure. How to Pray. I follow two steps behind my son on the gravel path as he shouts hello to ducks. The squirrel has lost a stripe of fur down his back. I should have married someone else. A person can die of motherhood. Even the flame maple's promises have stopped sleeping in the house. He was gone for years before he was gone. First he shot a doorway through me, one complaint at a time. Then he stepped through the place my body once was and kept going. He said he wanted to keep trying, but what did that mean in the absence of trying? God, the cherry blossoms are in bloom. This morning, my son made me an arrangement of flowers shredded with scissors. I married a man whose hands were unmade to please me. I hold the vase like a torch.
Thank you. That was Sage Cohen, local poet, talking about her new Radical Divorce website. And you're also offering an online course for parents to help them move through divorce and get come out stronger and better. Yeah. And as I read some of the goals for the site, you mentioned that the pain that people go through, that's inevitable, that it's your effort is not to deny it in any way, but to make it, quote, worth it, to transform the pain into something else. Can you talk a little bit about the process, what folks might expect, what activities they might go through the six, it's a 6-week online course?
So the overarching invitation of the experience is that people realize that they have choices about their stories, and that it's so easy to sort of, we're in the habit of seeing things in a certain way. This happened, it was horrible, period. What other way is there to look at it? But when we start realizing that we have choices about, we may know, there are many things that happen that we don't have choices about, but the things we think about what happened, the stories we tell, those are ours. And we can steer those. We have choices about those. So the journey is meant to be a mix of strategies. You know, try this when you are stuck in this way. Try looking at it this way. Try saying this. Try writing this. There is a mix of art. There's poetry and music offerings there. There's a weekly invitation that comes before the weekend, what I call medicine, rituals to do, exercises to try. The goal is to kind of loosen up, you know, we get so tight around our pain, and to just kind of find our freedom to move with what is happening. And it's in my experience, what I have found through my own experience and in the writing that I have done is that we have this idea that we move through processes in a linear way because time seems to be linear. But we move through transitions like this kind of in spirals. So there isn't the grieving time and then the lawyer time and then the, you know, setting up new homes time. And then so it kind of cycles through. I have it broken into kind of 6 stages, but we don't move linearly through those stages. We kind of circle through again and again and again and touch on all of those multiple times each week so that wherever somebody is in their process, there is something for them to consider. Mm-hmm. Does that give a pretty good idea?
We've mentioned a couple of things that aren't quite available yet. Your upcoming collection, How to Leave Your Husband, and your new blog and online course, Radical Divorce. For those listening, how can they begin to get in touch with you to either find your new collection that you've been reading from tonight or to get involved with the blog and course?
Radical Divorce will be available very soon at radicaldivorce.com. My current literary blog is called pathofpossibility.com. You can find me there. That's if someone wants to find me immediately, that's the best way.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, I found that the site that I was able to preview, it was just so welcoming, and you offered so many, not only personal writings, essays and poems to describe the different phases that you went through, but you also include interviews with experts, divorce experts. Mm-hmm. There's a wealth of information on the site.
I forgot that part from the class, yeah.
So, yeah, I would encourage folks to check out radicaldivorce.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it should go live in a couple of days. And what I found ultimately, there's a lot of hope in that site. You really offer people hope, which is golden. Mm. I mean, what else is better than that? And, you also say you will be kissed again. You will feel these things again. And thank you for sharing that, your own journey. And it's really, I think, going to be very helpful to people.
My goal is that people feel like they have a friend who's been through what they're going through, who's standing a little bit further down the road where they can start to imagine themselves standing. That is my hope.
Will you share another poem with us?
Sure. Dear Fritz Guesthouse, I sleep the sleep of seagulls, sucked out shell and salt. I fold my wings in and tuck my head under like the idea of a ship and slip along the surface of time. It has taken 41 years to prepare this body for living. Beside my bed, the blown-over trees seem to be aching with every arm they have for someone across this ocean. Last night, soaking in sulfur, floating out over our world, I met a man. I didn't know it yet, but he had a tiny conch-like curl of plastic whispering secrets in his ear. I joined the chorus as we soaked our skin in stars. He was a gentle man, worn smooth by pain. We asked our questions, and the ocean, like all great teachers, did not answer.
Thank you. That was a local poet, Sage Cohen, reading a poem from her upcoming collection, How to Leave Your Husband. And Sage, we've talked about your writing guide, the poetry writing guide, mm-hmm. Writing the Life Poetic, an invitation to read and write poetry. And you also have a writing guide called The Productive Writer.
Yes.
And you were kind enough to offer to share some writing tips with us tonight about productivity and overcoming obstacles. So I'm all ears.
Okay. Well, I think the number one thing that we can say to ourselves endlessly when something didn't work out, we have a tendency to say, well, that's it. I tried that. That didn't work. I can't do that. That's done. I always say to people, try again. I mean, as long as we are alive, we can try something else. If there is something that we want, just try a different way. Submit it somewhere else. Write it a different way. Invite someone else. You know, whatever it is not the end until we are ready for it to be the end. Another strategy that I invite folks to experiment with is I say, think like a dog. My dog Henry, who is no longer with us, was a fierce competitor, fierce fetcher, and he had dwarf legs. He was like a lab on these tiny little legs, and he was completely unconcerned with how his very well, normally proportioned big sister dog was doing. He wanted what he wanted, and he made it happen. And he didn't worry how other dogs were doing it. He didn't worry that he was too short or too slow, or he just kept his eye on that ball and he went for it. And I think if you love something enough and it's important enough to you, keeping your eye on it and finding a way to stay engaged with it is letting your passion lead can make all the difference. I can give a few more if there's time, or we can leave it.
How about one more?
Another one of my favorites is pretend you're Pam. And we all have a Pam. I had a mentor when I was young in my business life, which was a writing business. And whenever I had to do something that I felt like I didn't had to shoot for something I didn't feel I deserved, or present myself in a way that I didn't feel like I was ready for. I would pretend that I was Pam. And so I find with writers, especially with things like marketing themselves or reaching in a way that they feel nervous about with a submission or conversation with an editor, it's funny how well it works to just imagine you're someone that you think is worthy of what it is you're trying to achieve and just stand in their shoes. And often it's a friend. Pretend we're promoting their poem or their whatever it is and
step outside yourself.
And yeah.
Very helpful. I know Christy Krug, my guest, a couple of weeks ago, she credits you. She says you're excellent at promoting, and she said your secret was you pretend you're doing it for somebody else.
Well, the other thing about promoting is, especially with writers, I invite them to imagine that you are sharing a spoonful of a dessert that you love.
That
marketing is just love made contagious. It's not, love I it. Wrote this thing and I hope you'll take it, but you know, I love poetry and you will too. And
eat
here
this
it is.
Up.
So to just stay in the love.
Thank you, Sage Cohen, for being our guest tonight. We look forward to your new collection, How to Leave Your Husband. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to check out her new site that's about to be launched, radicaldivorce.com, and do check out her writing guides for inspiration, The Productive Writer, as well as Writing the Life Poetic. We're going to take, I want to mention your website, the current website, if you guys want to connect with Sage immediately, pathofpossibility.com. Thank you again, Sage.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
You're one of our fine local poets. Oh. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick musical break and have an update from one of our former guests, the Let Us Grow Garden Foundation. Be right back.
It's a slow. But it's moving on. I've got my ticket. Don't pass me by. If I don't get on, oh, I'll break right down and cry. Only got a
That was the Staple Singers with Slow Train featuring Mavis Staples. We are going to have an update quickly from one of our community partners, the Let Us Grow Garden Foundation. We featured them on the show here in September. And Rima Green is here to give us an update and a way that we can help support them this holiday season. Welcome, Rima.
Thank you, and thank you for having us on.
Oh, our pleasure. Can you tell folks quickly what the Let Us Grow Garden Foundation
is? What Let Us Grow does is we work in the state correctional system. We are in 12 facilities right now. We're going into South Fork starting in January. We give horticulture classes, and we work with the guys in the gardens. All the state prisons have greenhouses, and they have gardens, and they've been highly unutilized. So we are now working with the Department of Corrections to teach the inmates how to work in the gardens. We've done a lot of work out at Columbia River. In September, Columbia River was cited by the food bank as being one of the top 10 providers of produce into the food bank. So it's really exciting. The majority of the food goes into the kitchens at the sites, and whatever is not usable in the kitchen goes to the food banks, and that's all over the state. Marion County is the other big one that we do a lot of work with. So the number of sites are now dedicating part of their gardens to the food bank. So this is a great way to relieve some of the current strain on the food banks by providing produce from the summer.
love how the men who are involved in the program mm-hmm. come out with skills and certifications.
Yes, one of the classes we give, we partner with OSU and we give a sustainable horticulture class, which provides a certificate, and it's a certificate that's recognized by nurserymen. So this is a great thing for the guys. They really love it. One of the guys who I work with told me that this summer we had a lot of corn, and he said one of the happiest times of the day for him was to stand in the corn because he could barely see the building.
Oh, my.
So he said it was the best part of the day for him.
So I understand there's a special way this season that folks can support you.
Absolutely. Willamette Week has chosen us as one of the charities that is in the Give Guide. And Por Que No and Next Adventure is supporting us by giving discounts. So if you donate, you will get a discount you'll get a taco from Por Que No and a 10% discount on any Next Adventure order. So if you would like to support us, and we could always use the support, we supply books and seeds and fertilizer and transportation for people to get to and from the sites. So if you would, you can either go to Willamette Week and donate on that site or go to our site, which is letusgrow.com, and push the Give Guide button.
And for those listening, Let Us Grow is like the vegetable,
yes.
Lettuce, LETTUCE, grow.org. Mm-hmm. And the Give Guide is giveguide.org. Yeah, so I guess everybody who donates will get a free taco from
yes.
Por Que No.
Mm-hmm.
And if you donate $15 or more, you get $5 off at Next Adventure. And if you donate $25 or more, you get $10 off at Next Adventure. And for you big spenders out there, if you donate $350 or more to Let Us Grow Foundation, you'll receive $75 gift certificate to the Portland Nursery. So you have a lot of community partners and
we
support
do.
This year.
I think, you know, this is something that really touches people when they hear about it. I have a lot of experience with the Correctional Institute, and one of the hardest things about being in prison is it's very boring. I mean, it's scary, but it's horribly boring, and a lot of times there's nothing to do. So when you get to, and you know, there is always the restorative thing of working with the dirt, with planting a garden and watching it grow. We had hundreds of tomatoes there, and a lot of the inmates had never seen anything but, you know, the vine tomatoes that you get from Fred Meyer, and we had purple ones and we had red ones. And one new guy came into the class. I said, "Why did you come to the class?" He said, "Indigo rose tomatoes." Never seen anything like that. It's absolutely amazing. You know, teach me how to grow this stuff.
There's so much data about education programs mm-hmm. and correctional facilities greatly impacting the recidivism rate.
Yes.
We're
only starting to gather statistics now mm-hmm. of all our graduates who have graduated the sustainable gardening class. Nobody has come back into the system. It's not a huge mm-hmm. body of people, but you know, we have a very low recidivism rate in Oregon, but this is, again, nobody's come back into the system. We can't say it's us. We don't have any data, but a couple of people who have actually gone through the program are now working in either nurseries. One gentleman is now taking a horticulture class at Chemeketa Community College, and another one is working with two churches for, you know, creating food bank gardens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people take the class and they say, "This was great, it's really useful." But other people go out and they take it and they run with it and they grow with it. It's great stuff.
Yeah, to learn more about this wonderful organization, letusgrow.org, and to support their work through the Give Guide, check out giveguide.org. Thank you, Rima Green.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sage Cohen, for being our guest at the beginning of the hour. Thank you all for listening to Bread and Roses. Thank you, Chris, our engineer. I'm your host tonight, Leanne Kranz. We're going to go out with a song I'm going to dedicate to the late, great Nelson Mandela. We lost one of our best human beings yesterday. This is for you. I'm standing.
are listening to the end of Bread and Roses, and we are getting into Heart Knock Radio, so stay tuned. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Enjoy.
KBOO is proud to present one of the greatest jazz films ever made, Round Midnight. Join us Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for this 1986 American-French film that captured the Paris jazz scene of the 1950s. Watch jazz legend Dexter Gordon deliver an Oscar-nominated performance. Round Midnight, the Clinton Street Theater, Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 2522 Southeast Clinton.
In conjunction with KBOO's presentation of Round Midnight at the Clinton Street Theater, tune in Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, when KBOO jazz host Rita Rega talks with bassist Chuck Israels about his experiences in the Paris jazz scene in the 1950s, playing with pianist Bud Powell, the real-life inspiration for the film. That's Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, between noon and 2 p.m. on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO